Chorus Call operator. Welcome to Vecima Networks' fourth quarter and year-end fiscal 2018 results conference call and webcast. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Analysts and institutional investors who wish to join the question queue, simply press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. Presenting today on behalf of Vecima Networks are Sumit Kumar, President and CEO, and John Hanna, CFO. Today's call will begin with executive commentary on Vecima's financial and operational performance for the fourth quarter and year-end fiscal 2018 results. Lastly, the call will finish with a question and answer period for analysts and institutional investors. The press release announcing the company's fourth quarter and year-end fiscal 2018 results, as well as detailed supplemental investor information, are posted on Vecima's website at www.vecima.com under the Investors heading. The highlights provided in this call should be understood in conjunction with the company's audited consolidated financial statements and accompanying notes for the 3 and 12 months ended June 30, 2018, which are available on Vecima's website at www.vecima.com. Certain statements in this conference call and webcast may constitute forward-looking statements within the company of applicable securities law. All statements other than statements of historical fact are forward-looking statements. These statements include, but are not limited to, statements regarding management's intentions, belief, or current expectations with respect to market and general economic conditions, future sales and revenue expectations, future costs, and operating performance. These statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict and/or beyond our control. A number of important factors could cause actual outcomes and results to differ materially from those expressed in these forward-looking statements. These factors include, but are not limited to, the current significant general economic uncertainty and credit and financial market volatility and the distinctive characteristics of Vecima's operations and industry and customer demand that may have a material impact on or constitute risk factors in respect of Vecima's future financial performance as set forth under the heading Risk Factors in the company's annual information form dated September 27, 2018, a copy of which will be available at www.sedar.com. In addition, although the forward-looking statements in these earnings call are based on what management believes are reasonable assumptions, such assumptions may prove to be incorrect. Consequently, attendees should not place undue reliance on such forward-looking statements. In addition, these forward-looking statements relate to the date on which they are made. Vecima disclaims any intention or obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as required by law. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Kumar to proceed with his remarks. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Fiscal 2018 was a year of broad strategic development for Vecima as we continue to lay the foundation for our future growth. We achieved important milestones on our Entra development pathway. We also completed the Concurrent acquisition, which positioned us in the fast-growing IP video universe and generated strong performance in the second half. Financially, we achieved full-year consolidated revenue of $78.1 million. That was 9% higher than a year ago and reflects the positive impact of the content delivery business. Our gross margin increased to 54% from 52%, reflecting a higher margin product mix. We also generated strong adjusted EBITDA of $14.5 million, which was right in line with our expectations. And I'm pleased to report that our cash balance remains strong at $57.7 million. This was after financing the Concurrent acquisition with cash totaling $37.4 million and continuing to invest heavily in new product development. In our Video and Broadband Solutions segment, we remain tightly focused on bringing our new Entra products to market. As most of you are aware, the cable industry is preparing for the seismic shift to DOCSIS 3.1 distributed access architecture. It's an essential transformation that will enable cable operators to compete in the new gigabit internet speed environment. Our distributed access node is the heart of our solution and provides the modular platform for deployment of multiple access technologies. By year's end, our Remote PHY version of this node had entered numerous customer labs, was shortlisted by two Tier 1s, and entered preliminary eval evaluation at a third Tier 1 MSO. Our strategy has been to provide a truly interoperable distributed access architecture node to our customers, and we're succeeding. We have achieved interoperability with several of the top-tier CCAP core vendors, and we've also demonstrated this to our customers. This is important because interoperability frees customers from being tied to a single vendor that may encounter technical challenges or result in unfavorable business terms. We've also continued to demonstrate our technical agility as we keep pace with our customers' evolving needs. I believe we're positioned very strategically for this large and emerging market. Looking at our progress on other Entra family products, we completed our initial release of our Entra Access Switch for both DAA, Distributed Access, Aggregation, and Business Services use cases, and trials have been initiated at multiple locations by a large cable operator. We've also made progress with our Entra Legacy QAM adapter, which provides video services on customers' existing Edge QAM infrastructure within a distributed access architecture. And we completed additional customer lab demos of this product with a number of MSO customers during the year. Overall, we're very pleased with our progress on our Entra platforms, and all indicators continue to confirm the size and scope of the market opportunity that the DAA phase of DOCSIS 3.1 represents. In our new content delivery and storage segment, the highlight of the year was acquiring the assets of the Concurrent business and following up with a smooth integration and ramp-up. Our content delivery solutions allow service providers and content owners to build and manage private, hybrid, or public cloud CDNs to store, transform, secure, and deliver their content. Importantly, our portfolio addresses those needs right now, and that's creating a lot of momentum. Sales in Q3 and Q4 were 11% and 14% higher than what the Concurrent operations achieved in the same periods last year. And by year-end, we were deploying IPTV and OTT-oriented services at numerous customers worldwide. During the same period, we released three new version upgrades for Aquarii Storage, Laguna Cache, and Zephyr Origin, aimed at enhancing the viewer experience and increasing revenue for our customers. We also completed a significant feature enhancement to Laguna Cache for one of our Tier 1 MSO customers. We expect the deployment of this upgrade to have a positive impact this fiscal year. Overall, it was a great start for our new operations, and we see continued momentum for our content delivery and storage business heading into fiscal 2019. I'll come back to tell you more about that in just a few minutes, but first I'm going to ask John to review our fourth quarter results with you. John?
Thank you, Sumit. For the purposes of this call, we assume that everyone has seen the news release and financial statements for the fiscal 2018 fourth quarter that are posted on Vecima's website. I'll present the relevant numbers in discussions around overall results, market segments, operational expenses, and the balance sheet. I'll start by reminding everyone that our results include the addition of the Concurrent business, which we brought on board midway through the year. As a result, all comparisons will reflect content delivery and storage numbers in the current quarter and current year, and not in the prior year. Starting with consolidated sales, for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2018, we generated sales of $24.3 million. This was up 66% from $14.6 million in the same quarter last year, and a 1% increase from the $24.1 million in Q3 fiscal 2018. The addition of the content delivery and storage operations accounted for most of this increase. In the video and broadband solutions segment, we generated fourth quarter sales of $11.1 million. This was down 18% from $13.5 million in the same period last year, and 9% as compared to $12.2 million in Q3 fiscal 2018. In our Terrace product family, sales increased 24% to $7.9 million in the fourth quarter, reflecting continued strong purchasing activity for the TC600E by a Tier 1 MSO as part of their continued network-wide all-digital conversion. Terrace QAM sales of $2.2 million decreased in line with our expectations. In our content delivery and storage business, momentum continued to build with sales growing to $12.0 million in the fourth quarter. This was up 14% from sales of $10.5 million in the third quarter of fiscal 2018. Revenues in the segment were split with $8.9 million in product sales and $3.1 million in services. Turning to our telematics segment, sales in the fourth quarter increased to $1.3 million, up 13% from $1.2 million last year, but down just slightly from $1.4 million in Q3 fiscal 2018. Looking at Vesma's business as a whole, we achieved a consolidated gross margin of 54.5% in the fourth quarter, which compares favorably to 51% in both the same period last year and in Q3 fiscal 2018. Our strong gross margin performance in the quarter was aided by the 60% contribution from the content delivery and storage segment, but was partially offset by a lower margin in the video and broadband solution segment. The various components of operating expenses, namely R&D, sales and marketing, and G&A, were all higher in the period due to our acquisition. Excluding the content delivery and storage expenses, the notable year-over-year changes in Q4 OPEX were as follows. R&D was down $0.5 million, due largely to higher deferrals and lower prototyping costs, offset by increased subcontracting costs as we continue to invest in the development of our new products. Sales and marketing was up by $0.2 million, largely to higher allowances for obsolete finished goods inventory. And G&A was up $0.1 million due to acquisition costs related to Concurrent. Total OPEX on a sequential quarterly basis from Q3 to Q4 in this fiscal year was essentially flat at $12.6 million. Operating income increased to $0.7 million in the fourth quarter of fiscal 2018 from an operating loss of $0.7 million last year. This increase was due to the operating results of our acquisition of Concurrent. Our net income from continuing operations also increased for Q4 fiscal 2018 to $0.7 million, or 3 cents per share. This compares to a net loss of $0.1 million, or 1 cent per share in Q4 last year. Turning to our balance sheet, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of $57.7 million. Our working capital decreased to $77.4 million at quarter end, from $110.5 million at June 30, 2017, reflecting the decrease in cash related to the acquisition of the assets of Concurrent. Finally, cash flow from operations, excluding non-cash working capital, was $2.3 million compared to $0.9 million in the same period last year. Overall, we're very pleased with the continued positive outcomes from our Concurrent acquisition, and the Q4 results were consistent with our expectations. Now back to Sumit.
Thank you, John. Looking ahead to fiscal 2019, in our video and broadband solutions segment, we expect to see a continuation of transition dynamics as the industry prepares for DOCSIS 3.1 distributed access architecture. While we could see some initial revenue from Entra sales as early as the end of calendar 18, any amounts would likely be modest. The volume phase isn't here yet, and until the MSOs finalize their rollout plans, it remains difficult to predict timing. In the meantime, we're continuing with lab trials and expect these to lead to formal trials in calendar 2019. Looking at some of our other product lines in the video and broadband solutions segment, we're anticipating continued deployment of our TC600E products as one of our Tier 1 customers completes their all-digital conversion. And we're making excellent progress in development of our new Terrace IQ products, which we're working on with two Tier 1 customers. Terrace IQ is the next generation of our Terrace and Terrace QAM families and provides an entirely new suite of commercial video platforms that work within an IPTV framework. Field trials have also been underway on our Terrace DVB platform with a European MSO with whom we have completed a supply agreement. These are promising new opportunities that, over time, should help to offset the decline in legacy product sales. Turning to our content delivery and storage segment, our outlook remains very positive. We're seeing a real build-up to a wide IPTV market that can support services like timeshift TV, streaming, and cloud DVR. Our products broadly address this market, and we intend to capitalize on our strong customer relationships in this sector. Over the coming year, we'll continue to deploy our content delivery and storage systems to customers in the U.S., Europe, and APAC to meet the growing demand. The significant feature enhancement to Laguna Cache is also expected to continue driving strong order flow. So, we're looking at a year of continued growth for our content delivery and storage operations. And as we move into fiscal 2019, I want to mention again that Vecima is now strongly positioned at the forefront of the two most significant market developments driving the cable industry, the move to gigabit internet and the rapid growth of IP video. Our focus will be on pursuing the significant opportunities in both sectors, while also leveraging the complementary nature of these two businesses to provide benefits to our shared customers. We have the technical and financial strength to continue pursuing our technology roadmap, and we have both the customer relationships and the track record to translate those technologies into profitable growth. We're very excited about our future. That concludes our formal comments for today. We'd now be happy to take questions. Operator?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Analysts and institutional investors who would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on their touch tone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star, then 2. There will be a brief moment while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Todd Copeland with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
Morning, Todd.
Good morning. I just wanted to get set up for thinking about the model. So I'm going to ask you a couple of margin and OPEX questions, and then I'll talk about the trials. So just firstly on gross margin, it's been ticking up a little bit better mix, I guess, the acquisition, et cetera. How should we think about that into 2019?
Sure. So, you know, we did in the fourth quarter, you saw it, a higher content delivery segment revenues and higher margins thereof, and that created an opportunity for some uplift as we saw. You know, where we're seeing the trends overall in the business for this coming fiscal year, considering, you know, the mix, what we've done in operations and whatnot in terms of headcount, you know, our best view right now is that we could, you know, plan to average in that 50-54% range during the year. And that accounts for all of those factors of top line product mix, FX, and where we situate our headcount.
Okay. And when you think about gross margin, once some of these new products start to ramp up, if I'm not mistaken, it's a little bit more competitive. I think you've thought that it might be maybe not as favorable from gross margin, but the dollars will be higher. Is that still the thinking on that? So what might that look like in a year or two if you're successful in converting trials to commercial ramps?
Yeah, so I think there's a bit of a divide between content delivery and video and broadband that's going to be something to note there as we scale up into distributed access within video and broadband. We may very well expect that, you know, earlier margins could be consistent with current levels, but, you know, with the volume that's being looked at for the large-scale distributed access deployment, particularly of Entra-like nodes, we do anticipate that you know, gross on that line is going to drift downwards. But you know, as we've stated, our OPEX relative to that business is already at a you know, peak level. So you know, we'd anticipate contribution margin to the EBITDA margin to the bottom line to be to be very healthy thereof. In content delivery, very software-focused market, with various components of software, so we do anticipate continuation of these higher margins as part of the mix there.
Okay. And when you say drift down, does it stay in the 50s, or does it get into deep into the 40s?
No, I think that once we're in volume of distributed access, that we're going to move quickly to the 40s and potentially lower, with some massive scale going on there. So that's a spot of comfort for us, and it is consistent with how we see the market playing out. There are opportunities within the overall market when we consider variance between Remote PHY and Mac PHY, the access switch, and some of the related products we have now in our portfolio to have, higher margin mix within that. But this scale market of millions of Remote PHY nodes is going to drift, quickly to 40 and potentially lower.
Okay. But I mean, that given where the trials are, that's unlikely in fiscal 19. Is that the right way
to think
about that?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Sounds good. And then, what you mentioned, OpEx had peaked. So should we hold OpEx at the current quarterly run rate as we think about 19?
Yeah, Todd. I think I would be looking at the Q3, Q4 with content and delivery and storage folded in as being pretty representative of the next couple of quarters. And perhaps in the second half of the year, we may see in the small hundreds of thousands increase on each quarter in the sales and marketing expense as we're pushing further into the market with DAA.
Okay, sounds good. And is there anything else to note as we think about 19 in terms of other items, tax rate, et cetera? Should that change at all, or should it be in the current zone?
So I'd start you maybe with total R&D expenditure. I would say both that and the levels of deferrals should be consistent with what we've seen recently in Q3, Q4. So that kind of carries forward for the next few quarters.
Capitalized items, you mean?
Both the total expenditure and the amounts that are hitting the P&L and capitalized items should be reflective of what we've seen in the last two quarters. Wouldn't have you change that too much. And then in terms of an effective tax rate on a blended basis with concurrent for the full year, we'd be looking somewhere about 27.9%, so up a couple of points from what we have been.
Okay, that sounds good. And then, I noticed in your press release you talked about Entra being still in lab trials. So I guess it's got to move into the field before commercial ramp. So how are you thinking about timing, field trials before commercial? How are you thinking about timing now?
Yeah, so again, talking about some of the things we've spoken about before, look at the cadence. With any operator, tier one or three alike, there's that sequence of events leading up to that formal field trial, where first you have this marketing and architectural type conversation. You plan to intercept their specific requirements with your roadmap, and then you go ahead and do software development and any hardware variants to align with what the requirements are. Hardware submitted into the informal lab testing in the middle of that development process, and that carries on for some time. And new software drops are delivered along the way, so there could be some iteration through that process. But once that narrows, you move to this formal lab qualification cycle. We're headed in that direction, and after that's approved, you'd anticipate that operators would go into formal kind of voluminous field trials with their chosen set of shortlisted vendors as they're building up towards a near in deployment. So, in our view, we're in the midst of the various points of that cycle with many different MSOs. Field trials are being put on the drawing board, and we anticipate that of these three kind of big tier ones that we're very focused on, that we want to get into the field with one of them within fiscal 19.
Okay. one into a field trial in fiscal 19 or one into deployment?
It's potentially both. You know, the field trial, you know, that mid-year point would be our target spot there, and then deployment later in the fiscal year. Like I said, we view the formal field trial as on a path towards deployment at a given operator, and that the deployment is going to flow shortly after that. And, you know, it's our target is at least one of those big three. We need to remain nimble with all three. And you know there is still potential to go to the field with more than that one.
And have you been shortlisted at any of those three up until now, or do you still have to go through that?
So we have been shortlisted in formal RFP processes with two of those three. The third has been somewhat unique in how they're approaching the market. I would say they're a bit earlier in that cadence I laid out of informal to formal, still looking at different options and where things may land for their actual, access network upgrade. And so that, in our view, places it a bit further outward in time. But the other two have been quite formal with things, and we are shortlisted with those two.
And does a shortlist mean you'll be a supplier? It's just a question of are you first, second, or third, or do you still need to actually get selected for field and deployment?
So I think, you know, in the truest sense of the word, a short list means that of the 12 to potentially 14 vendors having various options for product that you have emerged as a smaller set that have been down selected as going into the formal process towards trials and potential deployment. I still anticipate that larger operators are going to divide the market amongst two to three, potentially four vendors. But it's not a foregone conclusion when you're shortlisted that you are going to emerge as in the deployment. It's just that you are moving forward in the process and are still, you know, vying for the opportunity to be one of those top two or three.
Okay. And then just sort of last question. So you've gone through these iterations with the software, you're now showing off the hardware in a formal way. What is your competitive edge? How do you think about your competitive edge, and how has that emerged relative to the other players?
Yeah, I think one thing that I've highlighted time and time again is that we're interoperability first focused, and we view that as a very important need in the marketplace. We aren't a core vendor today, and we are very responsive in the sense that we've tackled several different interops with TCAP cores. That plays into the whole model that's being sought by the operators to decouple the core from the node. And we, in some ways, stand apart in having that node independence and our proven interoperability with several different vendors' cores. And in pursuing that advantage, the node has been designed with software in terms of, you know, its modularity and whatnot, that they're very flexible in terms of iteration and whatnot, and we've demonstrated that rapid refinement that's allowed us to work toward this wide-reaching interoperability. You know, I think that overall gives us a good standing in terms of the view of how flexible that node ends up being. I think coming also from where we are as a smaller player and a new entrant, that we also speak to the kind of price point dynamics, cost versus benefit ratio. We think we have a good opportunity to come at it from where we are and hit the targets very well for that. There's all these things, and those two stand out,
Does fixed 5G by Verizon, does it pressure the MSOs to get going faster here at all, or is this independent?
I think there's a very loose coupling there. It does add a new fixed broadband wireless alternative that starts to have some merit from the subscriber level. I don't think that in the foreseeable future we're going to see it arrive at a place where you can start to match some of the capacity and connectivity speeds and what broadband speeds that even first generation DOCSIS 3.1 will offer, let alone full duplex with you know 10 down, 5 up gigabits per second type speeds. And you know there's a lot of work to be done likewise for 5G to get deployed and scale.
No, and that's fair. I mean, Verizon is competitively pressured to try and come up with an offering. So, like, I understand what they're doing, and I take your point as well in terms of the speeds. Okay, that's all I had. That's really helpful. Appreciate the color.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks, Todd.
Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from David Kwan with PI Financial. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
morning, David.
Just to clarify, I guess, Sumit, on the trial, field trials and the like, and the RFP process, just given full duplex, which has, I think, come onto the radar screen a lot quicker than many had expected, I think the RFP process you've said in the past were, I guess, related to kind of the first generation products, but with full duplex, I think you've talked about needing to requalify potentially, I guess, with some of these customers. Can you talk about where you are at this point, I guess, as it relates to full duplex, and then also, you know, where you guys are in terms of your own offering?
Sure. So in terms of those three tier ones that we've been highlighting, what we're observing is that one of them in particular is highly focused on the transition to full duplex and driving the timeline as expeditiously as they can, given the view that they're going to have one of the largest worldwide deployments of distributed access, and they'd rather it only makes good economic sense to deploy the final hardware solution moving towards full duplex. With that said, you know, the original Gen 1 deployment scenario at that operator and many others is much further delayed in time than initially anticipated, so that's going to pressure them to move in some way on Generation 1 irrespective of full duplex. You know, other two operators have a somewhat of a differing view. I think there's consensus that the full duplex will be very important in the long term at every operator, but they're being a bit more pragmatic in the sense that they need to move now and they're comfortable with potentially Generation 1 in the short term. Non-full duplex. We've also, you know, enabled various upgrade paths. I think we spoke about this last quarter between board upgrade and in the first instance going from Gen 1 to full duplex and then very quickly going to, once the chips arrive, a full duplex ready hardware variant that would be kind of flick of the switch on software upgrade from non to full duplex. You know, it's one of the key elements is availability of silicon. I've talked about that, you know, on the most advanced timelines being within calendar 18. We think that's a little bit optimistic at this point. We think, you know, first chips in early calendar 19 is more likely. We've been progressing development in the sense of as far as we can before having the chips and doing the architectural and design work for the boards. But we need to take a fast path to adopting those chips, and then with respect to software, you know, there's a significant amount of the work that we've already done and proven in the first generation that accrues to the full duplex generation. So there's only incremental in the sense of software. You know, in terms of RFP, our view is that of the operator, the tier one that is highly focused on full duplex. It's true that we will be entering another re-up on the qual process, but you know, our understanding is that the current set of vendors are being it's not as freshly open as the original RFP was. They've done, you know, and netted a lot of investment in the original set of vendors in terms of qualifying them. So that gives you an advantage in terms of the full duplex generation and the RFP there.
And for the other two, I guess at this point, it's maybe a little bit too early stage to figure out whether they're going to, rerun the RFP process, or I guess one of them, the other one, I guess, the one of the other two that has done an RFP process.
Yes, yes.
You don't know
the one that has done the RFP is, you know, full duplex is not in the landscape yet. And the other one has been, like I've said, informal to this point, but we do believe that as they formalize, the current view is that they may formalize around the current generation, depending on timing, that could lead to some consideration of full duplex if they get to the point where, you know, full duplex hardware is the standard, which is, you know, of course, going to be later next calendar year.
Okay. And just in terms of, I know the work that you're obviously doing ahead of, you know, the silicon being available, but assuming it's available early calendar 19, like how long do you think it would take to get stuff into the available for the labs?
I think that you know, we're on a fast track timeline. Like I said, we've done a fairly heavy amount of work preparing for that set of chips. There are significant changes in the technology and full duplex, and it's not only full duplex capability. There's second generation type advancements in the silicon, even as it relates to non-full duplex mode, that are important. So you know, there has to be a fair amount of work done. Once those chips drop, we'll be ready for them with hardware and boards. We'll have to bring up those boards, and then we'll have to port the software, and then start proving out the feature sets of that are unique to Generation 2, amongst them full duplex and several other features that are coming. I think that you know, that's going to be, relatively speaking, a shorter cycle than we had in Generation 1, particularly because we have so much software that's accruing to the next generation. However, you know, in and of itself, it is a significant effort. You know, I'm not prepared to get into exactly when that's going to come out of SMI yet. It's very important competitively to keep that to ourselves. So I'll just give you that color.
Okay, thanks. Moving back on the terrorist side, so I guess one of your one of the key customers that's been trying to finish up their digital conversion, you know, obviously saw some good revenues coming in this quarter, I think primarily from them. Still expectations that, you know, this quarter probably will be pretty decent and tailing off in, I guess, Q2 of fiscal 19?
Yeah, I think that overall for Terrace, as we've highlighted in the color side between the lead and the two other tier ones, you know, we have the lead and network fill-in. They've been absorbing inventory. There might be some resurgence there within the year, but they're on a fast track towards moving to the next gen platform in Terrace IQ. The second one, which you just spoke of, the one that's completing their conversion now, we can kind of thinking they're 70-85%. They are in the midst of a network format upgrade going in, towards MPEG-4. That creates some opportunity for density. So incremental units within properties. So we think that has an extension effect on the all digital conversion process with them that will help to keep things flowing for some time. And then the third tier one has been a network fill-in for some time. We talked recently about them moving towards channel density increase by new box on site, each site type of approach. That's gravitating more again towards the next generation platform, which natively offers a step function in density and feature set. So that places the timing a bit further out, but the size of the opportunity more interesting with that other tier one in terms of moving to the IQ.
And have you seen any of the other, I guess, two tier ones taking a look at that, or is that something that's further down the road and it's really just your lead customer?
Yeah, so we have, you know, the three tier ones we're talking about, the lead and the two others. The lead is definitely, you know, on a path towards Terrace IQ, the third tier one is also now on a path towards Terrace IQ.
Can you talk about maybe the revenue opportunity relative to I guess what you've seen maybe with Terrace? Is it something in the ballpark, or is it larger, smaller?
Yeah, I think overall the way we're looking, we're at a different point in time. You know, it's been a decade of Terrace family deployments. You know, some 25,000 properties domestically deployed with between Terrace and Terrace Guam. You know, our view is actually quite positive in the overall landscape that I've been talking a lot about in the context of content delivery, that MSO networks are moving to IPTV gradually in several steps. You know, that will mean that it's quite important once that happens in the larger network context that the commercial properties are likewise outfitted to ingest from that same network. We've also, you know, given that we're 10 years from the inception of the Terrace program at some of the leading operators, you know, we're at a point where technology has advanced. You know, channel density I've talked about increasing with the Terrace IQ generation, feature sets, you know, flexibility, whether we're going analog, HD, MPEG-4, or MPEG-2, all of these things are vastly different in the Terrace IQ generation. So overall, you know, that TAM could look interesting relative to the historical 25,000 properties we've deployed. You know, so it creates a very exciting new kind of market cycle for commercial video for Vecima once we move over to the new platform.
Thanks for the color. And just the last question here. You know, it seems like the integration with the Concurrent has gone well. Can you maybe talk about your plans for future acquisitions, especially maybe some larger ones? You know, do you feel comfortable taking something like a Concurrent size acquisition on now, or is that something you maybe wait for another couple of quarters?
That last part, taking someone like Concurrent where? Oh, taking a Concurrent size acquisition on. Yeah, I think, you know, we've had a good integration process. We're very happy with the performance. It's very in line with our view of the overall trends in that business and their penetration into the service providers with newer technologies for IPTV. That's all consistent with our thesis, and we're feeling great about that. You know, we're kind of two quarters deep as of reporting, you know, three quarters in time with Concurrent. You know, we're still of a mind that we're going to continue forward with the two very important segments between content delivery and video and broadband and everything we're doing in Entra. That's going to keep us quite focused. You know, I do think that opportunism in M&A is always a factor for us. You know, in terms of scaling up in technology or customers or products, that's always something that we would look at. It would probably be more relative to these two large segments for us than trying to go in any different direction. So, you know, it's a bit of a period where we're open, but we're focused on these two things first and foremost.
And do you feel that you've got a good grasp on Concurrent that you could take on another sizable acquisition in the near term if the opportunity arose?
I think we've got a very strong team there. We've got a very strong structure, as proven by, you know, the good performance we've had in the first couple of quarters out of the gate. So that gives us, you know, comfort that, you know, whenever there's M&A, there's always that risk of integration woes and troubles, and we've certainly on the opposite side from that, and everything is going so smoothly that creates, you know, more comfort with going further and levering up.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, David.
David.
Our next question comes from Oli Pragal, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning, Oli.
I'd like to know about NAFTA. If that does not continue, with Canada included, how might it affect Bessemer?
Yeah.
So Oli, it's John. I would say, you know, there's certainly some uncertainties around trade policies, and we've been monitoring them. I'd say as we stand here at this point in time, we're finding that our supply chain are working their locations and routing of supply to try and be able to service the Canadian market without too much impact. And so, you know, we are monitoring things week to week, but at this point, I think what we know, we're comfortable that there is little or no impact, but we have to continue to monitor to things as they arise.
Okay. And another thing, where do you see the growth rate in concurrent, like revenue growth compared to like DOCSIS 3.0 or with the original Bessemer, or the fundamental Bessemer?
Yeah, I think the way we've been observing concurrent is that, you know, they've been on a path of growth. You know, in the short term, the way we see things playing out with the opportunity is that if you took the trailing 12 months and went after 10% thereof, that would be a reasonable target for us. It is a growth market in its own right. Moving to IPTV between the content delivery, the transcoding, the storage, you know, broadcast service providers and whatnot. So, you know, we could see that growth rate start to lever up, but we're highly focused on the first few years maintaining a modest growth rate in that 10% sense.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Oli.
We have time for one more question. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1. There are no more questions at this time. This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.